Good afternoon. This is the 3 o'clock session. Taking a level on that? Good. My name's David, and I'm a sex and love addict. I'm from Austin, Texas. Hey, everybody, it's great to have you all here today. Just to let you know, I have the microphone here. That means we are being recorded. And just a reminder, I'm sure everyone's getting the message from other sessions, but if you do not wish to be recorded, then you can remain silent. If you wish to use an alias, you may do that. And if there are any members of the media here, you have to identify yourself to me right now. I don't think anybody is, but just double check. Everybody feel comfortable being in this situation? Okay, good. Today we're talking about building intimacy in relationships. And I am probably the world's foremost expert on how to mess up intimacy in relationships. I was married for 13 years and recently divorced. And one of the chief complaints that my wife always had in our relationship was that she didn't know me. She wanted me to open up more. She wanted to know more about me. And for years and years, I held back, didn't express what my real desires were, what my real thoughts were. I was a witness to watching how that lack of intimacy, how that lack of sharing and trust on my part contributed to the marriage failing. And through that, we took many courses in couples therapy, weekend retreats, and so forth. So I learned some things from that. And I guess over the years, I've become slowly, reluctantly, kind of kicking and screaming better at being a communicator. I've still got a long way to go. It's still pretty much, from time to time, I basically really suck because I just will hold back and tend to retreat when things get too confrontational. Probably a lot of us are like that, in that we, if you're in a partnership with someone, after a while, after the love rush wears off, then you have times when you have to start making adjustments. You have to make compromises. And frequently we want to make requests. We want our spouse or our partner to change in some way. And that partner, asking that partner to make that change is a difficult thing to do. There's some more handouts if you haven't got them. Who has the handouts? You have them, Charlie? There's a two-page and there's a single page. So if you could hand those out to the rest of the folks. And hopefully everybody has a copy. So one of the things that I learned was that verbal intimacy is absolutely key to a relationship surviving. And a lot of us just don't like talking. A lot of us never get out of that discomfort zone and into a comfort zone. So I thought I would share with you two types of intimate communication today. The first one I'll talk about is writing. Excuse me while I get my old man glasses on. And this letter writing is a skill that I learned a few years ago. I was a failed English major in college, so I thought I could really write one time in my life. And then I found that, maybe I'm not such a great writer. In writing letters to our partner, it gives us that opportunity to I think, collect our thoughts a little bit more. You're a lot less apt to explode, to get into that confrontational situation where you start screaming and yelling, "Why don't you do this? I want you to do that." And there's some real simple rules on how you can use letters to create that feeling of non-judgmental atmosphere of supporting each other, demonstrating through writing that you love each other, and then at the same time saying, "This is something I need. Will you change in some way for me?" And this is done in a very formulated way, and it's very, very quick. It doesn't take a lot of time to do. It's hard to do at first. It's kind of embarrassing to do at first. But if you try it once with a loved one, I promise you that it really, really does work. And So here are the elements of it, as you can see there in the after that first paragraph. When you set up a time to share a letter with a loved one, you have to do it in a space of complete security. It means no telephones ringing, no kids running around in the house, no music, no stereo playing. Time when you know you've got time together, where you don't have to be somewhere in 15 minutes. So those kinds of things, all you have to set all those aside and say, we're going to have 30 minutes, whatever you need, to share. And when you write a letter, you make it very brief. It doesn't have to be more than in a couple of paragraphs, really. Three paragraphs, maybe four. So the elements we have here, number one, which is to write a brief single-page letter to each other. And the first paragraph contains a sentence or two to your partner that makes you feel about what it is that makes you feel closest in your loving moments. And then in italics, I say here, use metaphor and descriptive words as much as possible. Use feeling words. So, you can see an example at the bottom of the letter. Confrontation often gets accelerated when I say to my spouse, you make me do this, as opposed to expressing, I feel this. You can't have your feelings negated by your partner. If you feel something, you feel something. It may not ring true to your partner for some reason. Your partner may disagree with you. But the fact is, when I feel sad, I feel sad. You make me feel sad is a whole nother issue. So we try to avoid all of those kinds of accusatory language. So in the first paragraph, you write about how you feel about your spouse. And if you look at the example at the bottom, it says, Dear John, when we first met that summer at your sister's wedding, I remember the feeling of joy at our first conversation. The contact we made with our eyes was like light pouring through glass and creating a rainbow of beautiful colors that went straight to my heart. Now, this is something I just made up this morning because I thought somehow, boy, that sounds poetic, doesn't it? It's visual. It's loving. It's got this great sense of metaphor being used. All of those things you want to try to incorporate into the first paragraph of a letter to a partner. Use metaphor. In this case, I was saying, you know, light pouring through glass. Prismatic diffraction, maybe. One of those visuals that comes to my mind. I see the rainbow of colors. You use words that talk about how you feel. Feeling of joy. Feeling of security, feeling of closeness, whatever those things may be. And you can make up a list if you're not so good at trying to find descriptive words, adjectives perhaps. You know, go to a thesaurus or something and find some. You know, do a little research before you write your letter, if you have to, if you're not very good at writing. Okay, then you go on. In step number three there in the elements, express our concern or wish that it may improve your feelings towards your partner. So in this case, in the second paragraph, well, we'll finish the first paragraph first. This feeling was so warm, so beautiful that I've carried the memory of it with me every day that we've been together. And then the second paragraph reads, recently I've felt neglected in our relationship. I'm not saying you neglect me. I'm saying I have felt neglected. I feel as though I'm suffocating under a deep layer of blankets. Again, a descriptor that really gives some sort of emotional or sensual feeling about what it is that I must be feeling right now. There's no light penetrating into my heart the way it used to penetrate from your smile and your conversation. I'm sad at this development. I want very much for us to return to a path of mutual sharing. I feel locked out of your daily life, and I want very much to be let back in. So things like this are hard to write, but they can be written in neutral language. So here I have, you know, I've composed this part of my letter. And then there's something else that I want to say in the letter is there's a behavior change. There's something that you're doing that causes disharmony in my feelings, in my heart. You're not going to say to that person, you know, you're doing this to me. But you have to somehow express that you wish there would be a change of behavior. So in the third paragraph, I say, I have a request for a small behavior change for this coming week. Will you spend one week with me without watching television when you come home from work? The joy of having you back into my life for just this week would be immense for me. And I close with a loving closing. I love you and look forward to sharing many more beautiful evenings with you, Jane, or it could be Dave. So, back to the elements. There's the example of the letter. I've expressed a concern or a wish towards my partner, which is number three. Number four, I ask for a behavior change. And five, I ask for a reasonable time limit for this behavior change to be maintained. If I screamed at my spouse, you're watching too much TV, damn it, I don't want you to ever watch that television again. We're not going to get anywhere, are we? So this is a very limited, controlled type of request. And then number six, at the end of each letter, you write a positive affirmation of love. Then number seven, you set a time to meet in a comfortable setting, which you talked about, no distractions. And number eight is you sit in front of each other with your knees touching or perhaps your fingertips touching. And in the way I've done that, I'm going to borrow Karen here for just a sec. Karen, would you move your chair in the middle for a sec? Maybe you can put your chair to face me. And then let's sit down together for a sec. So if we had our letters, here's Karen's got her letter, and I've got my letter I've written. What we can then do is we've set a time to meet. We change letters with each other. And then you sit for a minute, 2, 3 minutes, whatever it takes, and you read those letters to yourself in private. Once you've read those letters, then it opens up a period for you to have a brief bit of dialogue. So we've each written our letter. We've each made some expression of how we feel about the other person that's positive. We each make a statement about how we feel, and perhaps there's something not right in that relationship. And then we each ask for a change of behavior. You share the letters, you read it, and then you discuss the letter. It doesn't have to be constructed in any kind of way. You can just feel what it is that the other person has written to you, accept it, and then ask. And you can ask me in this case, you want to ask me to stop watching TV all the time?
Yeah, would you please stop watching TV all the time?
How about now asking me if I'd just stop watching TV for a week? Because I'm going to say, no way I'm going to stop watching TV for a week.
I really would like to spend some time with you. Do you think you can stop watching TV for just a week?
I think maybe I could do that. Because I'm really glad that you've told me that how this makes you feel. And I guess I really haven't thought about the fact that maybe I'm shutting you out of my life, so I'll try real hard for a week. I promise you, for a week, I'll do that. Is that okay?
That's great. Thank you.
Okay, and I'm going to talk to you about brushing your teeth. No. So that's the idea behind it. Now, it's the first time I did it, man, I was just scared out of my wits. I thought it was really, really, really a tough thing to do. A little less tough the second time you do it. Little easier the third time you do it. And if you make a practice of doing it it doesn't have to be 9 o'clock on a Monday night, but you know, on a regular basis. If you try writing a letter to your loved one, your partner, it does have an effect over time. I found it's easier to put it in writing than it is to speak it. For some reason, things don't escalate beyond that control point when you write things down. So that's something you can take back with you. Use the letter at the bottom as a model for how perhaps you can try that. When you go home, if you got a loved one, a partner, give it a try and see how it works. What's that?
I just wanted to know if I could put my chair back there.
No, you have to stay here for a minute. You're going to be a guinea pig for again. yeah, okay, you can put your chair back.
Is this letter copyrighted?
You can put Elroy and Loretta and any other names you want there and just change the names. Any questions about that? Has anyone ever done this before? Yeah.
Yeah, so my question, and I'm sorry to come at this from kind of a negative perspective, but my belief is if underneath this is a fear of intimacy, then this ain't gonna cut it. That there need, because this is, there's going to be some reason to not do this. And in my marriage, my husband would accuse me of being controlling when I would say, these are the things I need. Like if I need you to shut the television off at 9 o'clock, you're just so controlling. So if you could address that, I'd really appreciate it.
So the issue is, what do you do if you're at that kind of that ground zero level where just the whole idea of of making a request or trying to communicate through dialogue is the intimacy is too scary. Too much of it. There's too much of a block to even starting the intimacy. What do you do? Does anybody have any suggestions? Since I'm not a therapist.
It seems like it would be helpful to go into it with the expectation that the answer may be no, and that that's okay. Because, you know, when you're sitting down, I mean, and you make a request of somebody, it has to be okay for me to say no to your request, but still love you.
Yeah.
My name is Charles. I'm a recovering sex addict. Hi. In my experience, even expressing negative emotions somehow brings out something... some kind of intimacy, because if I'm talking with my wife and I say I'm really angry, you know, I'm really angry about what happened in this occasion, and you know, about that I feel a certain, you know, anger, then as long as we're talking using boundaries and expressing ourselves without accusing the other person, or without you know, following some pretty good rules as far as containment and not violating the other person's boundaries, then there have been some good exchanges of intimacy, even when you're talking about heavy stuff that, you know, as long as you're doing it with respect and you know, without, I guess, you know, expecting anything. That's why I was surprised about the asking for something. Sometimes the... exchanges that we've had are work well when we're just being honest with each other.
Thanks for sharing, Charlie. Anybody else? Sonia.
If the problem is that if you're asking for behavior change, I think that I would have to tie the behavior change into why I'm asking for it. And you're stating that in the letter, saying, I feel locked out of your daily life and I want to be very much back in. And one way would be to stop, you know, I feel especially locked out whenever you are watching TV constantly. So if there's, you know, would you be willing to cut down how much TV you're watching? I have this issue, and I know I didn't handle it well because I had like a raging fit over my husband playing, you know, internet poker and during our time of, you know, deal. And I didn't tell him why I got mad. I just got pissed. And then he heard me, but I had been saying in these real subtle ways, you know, and I just had to express it. But we had to talk about it later, and I had to say, I'm really feeling ignored and neglected because you seem to love the computer internet poker more than you seem to want to spend time with me. And that's how I had to say it, you know, just you're spending a little more time with that. But I had to give a reason behind it. And if I can express it healthy enough, which sometimes I don't do that all the time, then he, you know, he should be able to hear it if he's willing to have the same amount of intimacy with me. And I think that that is a key point that I know, is if I can express what I want, and if he doesn't want the same thing I'm looking for, we're never going to be able to talk to each other and never really get to that level of intimacy.
How did he respond when you said that you're feeling lonely or shut out? That did he respond in a positive way or not?
He did respond. He took the after. He said, "Okay, I hear you," and then he went. He took the little icon and deleted it all off the computer and said, from now on, I will not play again. I said, okay. And he stopped. And then he said, there's, you know, I, you know, hours later, okay, I was doing that a lot. I'm sorry it took what it took for you to have to tell me that, you know.
I'll just, you know, I've got to tell you what to say. And just as a suggestion, when he says, I'll never do that again.
Yeah.
Right. You know, he may feel that 2 weeks later, you know, he starts looking at, you know, the playing, you know, poker again. And then he'll feel guilty or that he's failed you. That's why that limit thing works. Because you can say, and you know, if you love him, you know, you don't want him to deprive him of everything that he likes to do. But there has to be compromise. So if you said, stop for a week, can you do that for me? Then what?
What he does do now is say, are you going to be on the computer doing work? Because if you are, I'm going to go to the other one. And is it okay with you? And I say, no problem. I'm going to be here all night. Go. And he says, okay, just checking with you.
I really do admit, okay?
Hi, my name is Najwa. I'm a sex and love addict. I really feel so embarrassed about what I'm going to share, but I guess it's okay. This kind of level of intimacy is the level of intimacy that I developed in with my acting out partner then. And I didn't practice that kind of intimacy with my husband. I don't want to say that, but that's the truth. And in my relationship, I was who was cheating on my husband. And my husband was hurt. He was dealing with a lot of shame and a lot of pain. And I was enacting out, so I thought everything is going to be okay now. I'm not acting out. And the pain is going to be gone, and everything is magical. And that wasn't it, because he was in so much pain. He was rejecting me constantly. He didn't call me names, which was good. He just was avoiding me all over, I mean, many, many times. And I was so ready to just go, you know, go leave home. And I said, I'm leaving. And so I was sitting on the porch crying. And I called my sponsor and said, you know what? This is not working out, because he's not really answering to my requests, which is love me, because I need to be loved. If you don't love me, may I as well leave. So what I did, my sponsor said, well, hurt people hurt. So you right now, you're in pain, and because you are hurt, you just want to just blew it off. And I said, yeah, pretty much is what I want to do. She said, well, you're in the STEP program. What are you going to do? What are you responsible for today? I said, what you are not doing that you needed to be doing? And I said, what you are pissed off at? I said, because he doesn't hear. He's just watching TV all day, and he's, you know, sitting on the chair. And she said, what are you have to do? What are you supposed to do right now? Instead of, you know, nagging at him all the time. And I said, well, I think I need to cook and I need to do some cleaning. I'm not doing that. I'm not taking care of my house. So, and being responsible for what I have to do and not expecting another person to do what I want him to do, let him do his work and manage his life, is that is really helping me a lot, because I do have what I needed from him is, thank you, baby. I love you and I miss you. And I've been doing the work that I needed to do, like cooking, cleaning the house, being there present, you know, communicating with him, but doing my work and recovery, which is taking me a lot of time too. And I'm just coming and I have 5 minutes. I leave a note and I say, I love you. I do this and I do that. And I'm building trusted relationship, a commitment relationship, because also I'm so afraid to be intimate. So when my payoff now is, I love you. Thank you. And little by little, we're building a trusted relationship, which is a lot of work. But I believe if we keep in the solution, we're going to make it. And the solution for me is doing the things that are going to address my needs, what I want from you and what is my part, what I can do, you know, because I can, in my addict move, I can manipulate that. For many, you know, I can go and ask for this so I can get that. But using that intelligence in my marriage and say how this is going to work and what I can receive from my partner, from my commitment relationship. Thanks.
Two more. I'll take this one first and then take yours.
I may be wrong, but I suspect, Dave, that you would think of this exercise or exercises like this as something that is useful in a situation where both people are coming into already have a desire to be intimate with one another, but are struggling with making that happen in the face of self-control problems and, you know, sort of the heat of the moment stuff, old habits getting out of control over and over and over again. And, you know, I'm trying to sort of like relate this back to my own sort of just sort of my own sobriety, my own personal recovery. And sort of like, for example, healthy dating rules. I can want with all my heart to go out with someone once a week and have one phone call with them in between. But unless I make that a rule that I have to follow and create mechanisms where it's like, okay, I'm going to go out to dinner with this person, and then I'm scheduled to go to an 8 p.m. SLAA meeting afterwards. So I know I'm not going to wind up in their home. You know, have some actual structure that is going to support the behavior change that I actually want to manifest in my life. You know, or my sort of like instinctive reactions or my addictive reactions or my rage reactions are just going to get the better of me. Versus a situation where, you know, my partner just doesn't want to play ball, or, you know, I don't really want to play ball, in which case this is not worth the paper it's printed on. So, I mean, I like this kind of thing. I was thinking, too, that the opposite sometimes also works really well. I haven't spent a lot of time in relationships and much less in successful ones. But in the relationship I'm in now, something that I find tremendously helpful is when I just go to my girlfriend and say, you know, I've been doing this thing that I know really bothers you, and I want you to know I'm going to stop. And she's just like, huh? What? You know, and it changes. It's like it changes the rules of the game. You know, it's like this is a relationship where you get to, it's safe to say you did something wrong and change. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a really good observation that you can really switch the tables on your relationship with your partner to say, I know I do this wrong. I know this. You don't have to ask me for a behavior request. I already recognize and I'm going to do this for you. And maybe you can even set a limit on that too, because so you don't have to break a promise again. You know, maybe I think limits are healthy. That way you don't have to end up being, you know, a person that can't keep commitment.
Hi, my name's John. What I've found that seems to work pretty well for me is when I feel like I'm getting stuck in the relationship, whether it's getting apathetic, where it's there's a lot of resistance on both sides, and I know I can see that it's not going in a good direction. Planning something fun to do kind of breaks the ice and lightens things up, like with my girlfriend going to a comedy club or going dancing or going out with another couple that's fun to be around. And it reminds me of the fun we had early on and does for her too. And then on the way home or that night when I get home or whatever it is, I'll make my request. And I'll say, you know, when you do blank, I feel whatever, you know, my request is that, would you be willing to? And I seem to get a lot better reception because it's, we reconnect in a fun way by having some fun. And then I can say it lovingly. I can make the request lovingly, and it doesn't seem to be perceived as a command or a demand. And it seems to work a lot better for me. And then one thing I want to say, and then I'll be quiet, is on my therapist's door, he has this sign that says, as you're walking into his door, it says, you know, do you want to be right or do you want to be in a relationship? Take your pick. And I like that a lot. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing. Anybody else? Okay, we'll move on to number two. Okay, so we got the written skill. And we'll have to go quickly on number two, which is talk about verbal communication. Healthy, intimate communication, written, spoken, or nonverbal language that conveys clearly and deeply one's thoughts, experience, and feelings without fear of reprisal or negative judgment. We all want that. The second model here on speaking. again, the same thing as with the first model. You schedule a time when you two can meet. No disturbances, no distractions, no kids, TV, cell phones, and so forth. And you ask, just like you said a minute ago, John, you ask, is there a time that we can discuss this? Is something that's important? You know, and then you know, ultimately, if there needs to be a request made, such as in the first model, there's that opportunity. In this one, I'm just sharing more. In this model, sharing more of understanding each other. There's no request made, but that's implied as well that you can make a request. Okay, so you set time to meet. Again, sit facing one another. You can have a table beside you or coffee table beside you perhaps or something else, but don't have any obstructions in between you that prevents you from touching. Again, the language is neutral. Language is feeling language. And after you've heard your partner's thinking when you're talking, you always summarize and you mirror what your partner has said. So when your partner says something, you repeat that back to the partner. And you'll find that there's so many of us, I am horrible at this, we have these automatic filters in our brains that only hear what we want to hear. Partner can say something to you is red and I would say it's white. You just told me it's white. Get it wrong every time. So by mirroring, by repeating what a partner has said, you really try to break down that filter that automatically sets in. So here's the example that we'll go through. Karen, do you have the will or the ability to read the dialogue with me? Can you do that? Okay. Is it gonna make you too nervous? Okay, Karen and I will not sit in the middle this time. So what we're going to read here, we're just going to read this example. This is example dialogue. If we had partners, when I've seen this done and practice is done, it's great when you have partners sitting in the middle of the room who can go through it and someone can coach them. Since we're not in really this situation where we don't have a lot of time to have someone coaching, we have to kind of do it shorthand. So this is the shorthand way to do it. But assume that this was a really experiential thing and the two of us really were sitting in the middle of the room and we were doing this without a script. So just use your imagination. This is theater, but this is just use your imagination. So why don't you start with actually, you know what? I'll be number one. I've been thinking lately about the discussion we had last month about whether or not to have children. I'm feeling a little uneasy about making a commitment to this right now.
Let me see if I'm hearing you correctly. You are afraid of commitment right now. Does this mean you can't commit to me? I'm concerned about this.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I want to have children someday, and I'm committed to you and to that idea. What I'm trying to say is that my workload is so great and our finances aren't what they should be, and I just don't know about bringing a child into our house. I'm feeling some stress about this.
I see. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you are feeling stress at work, and perhaps you feel you aren't getting paid enough to support a larger family. Have I got that right? Is there anything else?
Well, you have it partially right, but not completely. I feel that I'm being paid fairly, but I'm still new at this job, and I don't know if my pay raise next year will be really enough to help us be more secure. I just don't know. I don't know how I feel about the prospect of having children, maybe with more money. Yeah, maybe I'll feel better.
Okay, let me summarize what I hear you're saying. You're not sure that you want to have children right now. You're still committed to me and still want to have children, but now isn't the time for you because you're feeling uncomfortable, because you're new at your job and you aren't making as much money as you know you will make next year. Have I understood you on this? Is there anything else?
Well, yes, Karen, there's more. There's always more. I've been feeling a little depressed lately as well, just recently. And I think maybe the workload is too much for me, and maybe I'm not liking this new job as much as I should. And maybe I won't stay with this job as permanent career.
Okay, I didn't know that. I imagine that this must make you feel a little more insecure than I thought about your work situation and how that impacts having children. So let me summarize what I hear you're saying. You're uncertain about having children right now, even though you're committed to our relationship and committed to starting a family someday. The uncertainty is maybe even more than just that. You're feeling depressed as well. You're battling a tough workload, and this job isn't as rewarding as you thought it would be. You may get a good raise next year if you stay with this job, but then again, you may want to quit and do something else. This would have an effect on our ability to support a child. I can see your point. Can we discuss this question about raising children again at a time in the near future when you might feel more secure about your job?
Yeah, we can talk about it again.
Great. How about if we set a date for 6 months from today to review your feelings? Does that work for you?
Well, maybe a couple of years would be better, but no, I'll settle for 6 months. 6 months would be okay.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't know where we are. Thank you.
That gives me more time to think about processing how I feel about kids.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Because you love me?
Yes. I'll be patient with you because I love you.
Thank you. Now, I've seen this dialogue go on and on. And the one time I saw it modeled that was most was the is there more? The one time I saw it that was just so powerful was I'll just give you the 30-second synopsis. Husband and wife, they go. She's always in the theater. She's got this pet peeve that when people talk, it drives her crazy in the theater. She tried to shush a woman in the theater in front of them one time, and the woman retaliated. They got into this, you know, cat fight in the middle of the theater, and her husband wouldn't stand up for her. Her husband just sat there and didn't do anything. So they went through the same dialogue about her feelings about, you know, people being loud and interrupting in society, and him, you know, responding to that, you know, like, you know, you're always embarrassing me out there and I always feel like there's going to be a disruption. And her coming back to saying, well, you never stand up for me. Going back and forth with lots of misunderstanding about each other's motives. And what came down at the end was this fellow was a graduate of the, I can't remember, Annapolis, you know, he was, you know, an officer. And, what he revealed at the end was the reason he doesn't stand up for in these kind of situations is he doesn't think he can control himself. That if he gets into the middle of the situation, he may absolutely go ballistic and do something really, really dangerous or harmful to this other person. So all this time she thought that he just wasn't standing up for her because either he was, you know, afraid to, he didn't have the courage to, he was just, you know, I can't remember the word she used, but, you know, she thought he was basically, you know, a chicken shit or something like that. In fact, he was afraid more for himself, his lack of ability to control. And this was revealed to me, and it was so powerful. I mean, just people in the room were just, you know, amazed at this. But this constant miscommunication, right, going back and forth and back and forth with this couple. But the facilitator kept making him ask each other, is there something else? And then repeating, and is there something else? That's how you get through these layers of miscommunication. Mirror, repeat what that person says, and is there something else? Has anybody ever tried that, ever done this before, this technique? And you want to share experience about it?
I do. Hi, I'm Karen, and I'm recovering from sex and love addiction. And I've done something recently called imago therapy, and it involves a dialogue similar to this. But it also relates the incidents, you know, like, why am I triggered by this? Why am I feeling this way? To a childhood event. And then when you look at that, it kind of takes the energy out of it because it's not about the two people. It's about where, you know, what's triggering them from their childhood. And it also helps to create more empathy for what that person is experiencing and why they're reacting that way. So I find that to be really powerful. Thank you.
Anybody else, Charlie? You want to say?
Yes. My wife and I have studied some of the Pia Melody stuff, and I don't know if anybody's heard of that, but it's she has quite a few books out. One of them is called The Intimacy Factor, and it has these dialogue models in the back. And what we do is we have a ball and we sit across the table from each other. And when one person is holding the ball, that means that they have the floor. So we roll the ball back and forth and it works out real good. And there's the making a statement, basically opening the dialogue, rolling the ball, and then the person repeating back the statement to make sure that there's understanding, and then discussing how they feel about that or where the conversation may lead. Sometimes it's flat, but sometimes it gets interesting.
Anybody else?
Hey, I'm Brian. And first I'll say, you did a really great job on both of these. Thank you. Yeah, these are great. This second one I can relate to a lot. I think my wife and I have done this, but it's kind of been something we've done at the end of a fight. I think it would be more useful if we were to do it at the beginning, if we could. But there have been times when we've been in arguments, and at the end of that argument, one of us will have enough sense to say, okay, this is what I'm hearing. I hear you saying this, you know? And just to not only affirm that I understand what you're saying, but to say that I'm listening and I'm paying attention. And like when we take a break and each of us makes the point for the other person, it's nice because you feel heard and then you know for sure that you understand the other person. Or there can be corrections made, and sometimes, you know, there are that, which I think is really helpful. Now, that said, I think that this is really neat, though. I think it would be, it seems like the formula, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that somebody says, you know, like, this is how I'm feeling, and that the other person mirrors it and says, this is what I'm hearing. Is there anything else? Right? Like, that's the simple formula there. Yeah, I think it's really neat. Thanks.
I've had plenty of times when I've been right in the middle of that fight, just like you said, and rather than putting on the brakes and going to some kind of a technique like this, I haven't done it. And I've always regretted it later. So it's really, really hard when you're in the middle of a fight to put on the brakes and stop. I mean, it's darn near impossible to do. Not impossible, but close. So the trick is to try to do it before you accelerate into anger, because by the time you get to the anger point, the mirroring is going to stop, and the questioning is going to stop, and the accusations are going to start. Anybody else? Okay, go home and try it. It's really, really hard to try, but let's close with the Serenity Prayer too. This is easy for. Okay, we're going to put the speaker in the middle of the room, so everybody's got to say it with heartfelt emphasis. Here we go. And first, let's have just a moment of silence too. And the Serenity Prayer. God.
Strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.